Good morning. Welcome to Conversations on WDRT. I am Kayleen Welsh, and I'm your host for this week's episode. I'm super excited to be joined today with John Heasley. I think of him as our Driftless Area astronomer. He is an educator. He does a lot of work in the area on helping people get outside and see and understand the night sky. And I love, even as I welcome you, John, I love looking at your bio and all of the different ambassador titles you hold. I think there's a NASA ambassador and a Dark Sky Association, Solar System ambassador. I like the word ambassador because it makes me feel like a friend, someone who's going to support me. And so I welcome you to our show this week and the chance to talk about your ambassadorship of the night sky and the role that you play in helping us all learn more about it. So glad you're here.
You're welcome, and I'm glad to be joining you today and talking on your show, and glad to be back on WDRT again. And I love hearing that the word ambassador has such resonance with you. So, yeah, I'm real happy to volunteer with NASA, JPL, Jet Propulsion Laboratory, as their solar system ambassador. And I also volunteer with Dark Sky as one of their ambassadors and advocates as well. So good to be joining you.
Well, thank you. I would love to hear more about how this became an interest for you and really a little bit about your background. I don't believe you're a Midwest native, correct?
No, you are correct. I was very happy growing up on the East Coast in Philadelphia in the 1960s and 70s, and it was a great place to have a childhood, but it is challenging in Philadelphia to be a stargazer because of all the city lights, and they've even gotten brighter over the decades since I've been there. And then I got more interested again in stargazing when I moved to Southwest Wisconsin because we have such amazing dark and starry skies here.
Well, and I've been following you on Facebook, and one of the things that I really do appreciate, and I guess, you know, we can talk about some contact information for you later on in the show, too, but, you know, if anybody is wanting to know a little bit more, you know, just check out Driftless Stargazing on Facebook. You know, one of the things that you offer there is so much information. You know, there's sky maps and downloadable things you can, you know, take outside and look, you know, kind of figure out what you're looking at, which is just so super helpful, and so I'm grateful for that. Talk to me a little bit more, if you would, about how this interest in the skies came. You know, you're on the East Coast and you're not seeing the dark skies so well. How did this become such an interest for you?
Yeah, when I look back, I think it was just what was going on in the 1960s. If you remember, that was a big age for space exploration when the space program was just getting started, and we were sending out so many missions to other planets with robots to check them out and see what was there. So I think I just got caught up in all that excitement in the 1960s and the 1970s. And as I said, stargazing in Philadelphia can be challenging, but, you know, I can still see the skies. But I think a lot of it had to do with the Scouts, because I got to be a Cub Scout and a Boy Scout. And the Cub Scouts were good about taking me to a planetarium, the Fells Planetarium at the Franklin Institute. And I tell you, Kayleen, the lights went down and it got dark and the stars came up and they started pointing them out and telling the stories. And as a 9-year-old, I was hooked. And then a couple years later, they took me camping to places like the Pine Barrens of New Jersey, where, you know, it was really dark, and I was just awestruck seeing the stars overhead. So that's how I got hooked. Well, and now I want other people to have that experience as well.
Yeah, well, and that makes sense to me. And I guess I was thinking about this even as I was preparing for this conversation. You know, as a kid, I don't know that I even really paid much attention to the night sky. It's kind of like disappointing or disheartening to me that I never really, like, got that. I remember going to midnight mass on Christmas Eve and somebody pointing out some, you know, star or something that maybe looked like it was moving, probably a plane, and calling it Santa's sleigh. But I don't think we ever even really looked at the night sky other than that. The Big Dipper. I mean, I think I probably could have could find the Big Dipper. Yeah, as an adult then, it's really been fascinating, I guess, for me as I have learned more about the night sky and engaged with it more. But boy, you know, I can see where the 60s was stimulating for thinking about it. And now, like, I've been watching some of the photographs from the James Webb Space Telescope.
Mm.
And it's astounding to me. It's like mind-blowing. And yeah, I'm feeling your sense of awe.
Right, and it all comes back with the James Webb Space Telescope that was launched Christmas 2021. So it's been sending back pictures and information for the last year. And yeah, it is, again, just this exciting age of discovery that we're living through right now. So it's a good time to be stargazing, isn't it?
Yeah, all right, it is. And do you see that in people? Are you seeing an increased curiosity? Are more people interested?
Maybe it's self-selecting, but the people I run into are very excited about stargazing. The people I talk to in person, and also, you know, I'm reaching a lot of people on social media, as you mentioned, on Facebook, and there is a lot of excitement about that. Like, what is it that I can see with my own eyes up in the sky? And so that's what I try to do for people. Tell them, you know, every day, here's something you can see up in the sky this evening.
Well, between watching the sky and then I guess I learning just a little bit more about the potential of the galaxy, or even understanding, and even just weird connections that I hear every once in a while. Like somebody told me once that, like, I have as many bacteria in my gut biome as there are stars in the Milky Way. And I just kind of find some of those things fascinating to think, well, what really is all that space out there? And what does all that mean? And, you know, you hear I'm a little bit of a metaphysician, so this idea of as above, so below, and some of those things really fascinate me. So I guess I'm wondering a little bit, is there, you know, what cool things do you know about space that maybe some of the rest of us don't know with your studies? Is there something that really stands out for you that you find so fascinating?
Just how very much we are part of the universe. We're not separate from it. I know you've probably heard that before, but that idea that seriously we are made of star stuff, that all the elements in our body were forged in the stars, the carbon, the oxygen, the nitrogen, and then, you know, here we are on Earth, where all these elements have come together, and here we are, this star stuff, looking back at the stars. So those are some of the deep thoughts I have in the evening and night when I'm out late at night watching the cosmos. And like a lot of other people, I am just filled with awe of how huge it is. And I am just awestruck by this idea of looking back in time, that I'm seeing things that happened minutes, hours, years, centuries, centuries ago. Mm-hmm. And I kind of appreciate that cosmic perspective. And a little bit of research, every Kayleen tells me that awe is a good thing for humans to be experiencing. And so it's that feeling of awe that keeps me going out at night that I want other people to experience as well.
Well, and that's very fascinating, because I was just reading an article yesterday about the power of awe and wonder in reducing depression.
Yep, I'm not familiar with the research, but I'm reading things. I am reading things like that.
Yeah. You know, I think that's just a really important part of our own, you know, a person who works in mental health, emotional well-being, you know, I think it is just, it is fascinating to me. One, like you said, just looking at the night sky seems to promote and provoke some of those deeper thoughts and wonderings and possibilities and awe. And then, yeah, like for me, really looking at the pictures from like the James Webb Telescope, or even understanding some of the principles of our galaxy and far beyond I don't even understand that. It's like beyond what I can understand, which really just intrigues me and kind of blows my mind. It just tells me so much more that there's, you know, the more we know that we don't know. There's so much more.
Yeah, I like that sense of humility that comes from stargazing. Of it is a humbling experience. And you're very much right. Of I love hearing from friends of mine who often use the term astrotherapy, that after a tough day or a tough week, it's really important for them to get out in the stars and decompress and connect with a larger universe. So there's just so many benefits to stargazing.
That's a great word, you know, astrotherapy. I'm going to have to remember that word.
Okay. Yeah,
I like that. Uh-huh. And, you know, I guess I want to just share a bit, like, I think it was in 2020, right? Early, like, Comet Neowise.
Yes.
That was, you know, going back a little ways, but as you were talking about things coming from the past, that was one of the things that blew me away as I was hearing about this approaching comet. And I'm thinking, I mean, because it like came from the dawn of time. Can you speak to me a little bit more about Comet Neowise?
Yeah, Comet Neowise was very exciting, and I bet a lot of your listeners remember it, because it came our way in the summer of 2020. And there had been so many predictions of, oh, this comet's coming, and none of them quite ever lived up to the hype. But this one did. And it came close to the sun, it came close to the Earth, and it brightened up so much that you could go outside for about a month in July that summer, and you could see it just with your eyes only. It was easy to find under the Big Dipper. And I'm sure I don't have to remind you about the summer of 2020. That was the first summer with COVID. A lot of us were at home. A lot of us were isolated, not doing the things we would regularly do. And it was just, you know, kind of the comet we needed right then. Did I remember that summer? It got everybody outside in the evening looking up. And the phrase I was using a lot is, you know, we're sky watching together apart. And so even though we may be isolated, this is a thing we were all doing together that summer. So thanks. Yeah, it's exciting to kind of reminisce about that 3 years ago.
Yeah, well, it was just one of those experiences for me that really kind of like opened me up, I think, a little bit more to a greater maybe understanding from the night sky. I just think it's fascinating even how that comet was named. Basically, Neowise, the way I understand it, was like an acronym, and
yes,
it stood for, if I get this right, Near Earth Object Wide Field Infrared Survey Explorer. I mean, who the heck comes up with that? And then it ends up being Neowise, which I don't know that I can hear that word without thinking new wisdom.
I know. It does really resonate. So thanks for looking that up and for knowing that. Yeah, we do have these survey telescopes to keep track of meteors and comets, not just so we can see them, but for humans, we've kind of taken on responsibility for protecting our planet.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is part of a planetary protection program to kind of keep track of things that might impact Earth possibly.
Well, that's good.
And so that's why NASA and others are doing all these surveys. So Neowise is part of that program. But as a bonus, we get a heads up of when a beautiful comet is coming our way to inspire us.
Well, and I guess it's a good thing that maybe we have all these different kind of schools of thought working together on some of these things. I'm glad there's somebody out there keeping an eye on, you know, what might be impacting the Earth. And I'm also just really, really intrigued about the idea of comets being messengers of the gods. And what does it say when one shows up out of, in the midst of this COVID experience? I think it was even discovered in March of 2020. So,
yep.
I mean, it's just like, I don't know, is there a bigger picture? I asked the question. I can't, you know, have any answer about that, but I just think it's really fascinating.
Yep, I loved it happening that summer, and I loved the effect that it had on all the people here looking up at it.
Good. I wished that the dark skies situations were in place, and I know we'll talk about that a little bit more as we go on here. But even that summer for me, as we were driving around, my friend and I looking for, you know, where can we go to really kind of try to find this comet? And we did eventually. The hills of Vernon County offered us some opportunity. But there was something about really seeing this that is profound too. And I guess, can you speak to that? What is it about? I mean, I see this light in the sky. I mean, it doesn't look like it's moving. Felt, I don't know, important somehow. Does that happen for you? Like when you see some of these things that are unusual, or can you speak to that?
It does. I mean, I love the predictability of of stargazing to know that this event, you know, like later in August, the moon is going to move in front of the star Antares, and to know, you know, exactly the time when that's going to happen. But then I also love kind of these random, unexpected things that happen, like the northern lights suddenly showing up, or seeing a meteor streak across the sky, or seeing a comet that we weren't expecting kind of come in and to light up the sky. So, yeah, I'm with you. All those things I find very moving.
Awesome. Well, and maybe that's the next place for us to go to talk about is, like, what are some of the things coming up for us to be alert to?
Okay. So looking ahead for August, what's exciting about August is it begins and ends with a full moon. And that happens every once in a while because on average there's 29 and a half days between full moons. So we get one on the 1st of August. I think it goes by lots of names, but I think it gets nicknamed the Sturgeon Moon. And then we'll have another full moon to end the month on the 30th. So I'm liking that idea. And then another annual event coming up is the Perseids, a meteor shower. And that'll be peaking the night of August 12th and 13th. And it's good every year, but it's especially exciting this year because it happens on a weekend, so that's more family-friendly and work-friendly. And it also happens when there's not a lot of moonlight out, and so the sky will be especially dark.
Okay, well, let's look at both of those events just a little bit
sure. More
or whatever,
yep.
But I guess I'm intrigued about the two full moons in August. Does that happen very often?
Yeah, it happens every couple of years. Like I said, if you get a full moon on the 1st of the month, then you'll have one at the end of the month, and that can happen in any month except for February because you never have 29 and a half days in February.
Okay, and
so it does happen from time to time, I would say, you know.
And is that what's called a blue moon?
Oh, that's such a loose term.
Okay, all right.
It's defined so many ways, but people will use it that way when you have two full moons in the same month. Sometimes people define it as when you have four full moons in one season. There's kind of a loose definition of that, but sure, we can call that a blue moon. That's fine. That's fine to do.
Okay,
right.
Good to know. And can you speak? You mentioned that the first full moon, I think you said, was the Sturgeon Moon.
Every full moon kind of gets a nickname. Actually, not one nickname, but depending on the culture, different nicknames. Like I know the one in July was called the Buck Moon or the Thunder Moon, and the one in September, closest to the autumnal equinox, is often called the Harvest Moon, followed by the Hunter's Moon.
Where do these names come from? I guess it depends on the culture. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, and that's what I like of just, you check with different cultures and they have different names for their moons. Some are European, some are Native American, and then if you check of just other cultures around the world have their names for the full moon. So I like to notice those and collect those and just see, you know, what people are calling the full moon, because like I said, it connects us with that long tradition of humans looking up at the sky. I mean, we've been noticing moon phases for thousands of generations now.
Yeah, and it does. I mean, the moon is one easy way for people to track, to kind of see where we're at in the cycle in some kind of ways. The moon is a good,
marker. It's so reliable, and if it's partly cloudy, you know, you can still catch the moon. So,
And there's something pretty majestic about a full moon.
Still thrills me every time watching it. So, yep.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, we're going to take a break for just a moment here. I guess I just want to say hello to our listeners and remind everyone that we're listening to John Heasley, local astronomer, director of Driftless Stargazing, LLC, and I am Kayleen Welsh, and we are airing this on WDRT radio in Viroqua, Wisconsin. All right, John, so we were just talking about some of the different events for the summer here, so let's, like, move on to the Perseids. Because I don't know, I guess that's just another place, of the two big places where I feel like I've connected with the night sky. I had an experience with the Perseid meteor showers once, And this was a number of years ago, but at the time I was like kind of stunned to realize that somehow or other I had missed this all along. This goes back to that childhood and not looking at the night sky or something. It's like, I can't believe that this has been happening every year and I didn't know this. So
right. And if I was designing things, I would just make that part of every child's experience of just, you go out in the summertime and you get to see the Perseid meteors coming down. It's a good yearly ritual, so I'm glad you're looking forward to that.
It, again, feels connecting. And it was one of those experiences for me, again, that was awe-inspiring. I had actually kind of heard about this Perseid meteor shower that should happen, and I live right in Viroqua. So there was a bit of light, but I thought, oh, I'm just going to go out, hang out on my deck, and see if I can see anything. So I'm laying out on a lawn chair on my deck, and I actually fell asleep. And I woke up somewhere in the middle of the night, and I just woke up, and it was like the sky was ablaze. I mean, the sky was just like, there was just these shooting streams of light. It was just so fast. It was just such a blur that would just like go right across the sky, and it was just fascinating. It was just a really interesting way to wake up. But I was just awestruck. And so, yeah, I hope that everybody does get a chance to go out and see the Perseid meteor showers or any other meteor showers. But so you're saying they pretty much are the same time in August every year. Is that correct?
Yeah, I mean, we've got that leap day that throws it off a little bit, but pretty much around August 12th and 13th. And the way you described it is, I love that they're so easy to watch. You don't need any special equipment. Binoculars or telescopes not going to help you to see it any better. That you just go out, eyes only, bring your blanket, bring your lawn chair, bring your inflatable mattress, find a good dark sky spot if you can, away from the lights, crawl in your sleeping bag, let your eyes dark adapt, and just look straight up. And the meteors can appear pretty much any part of the sky. You might see dozens every hour. Your description was reminding me of that John Denver song. Was it Rocky Mountain High? Where he says, I've seen fire in the sky. And I don't know if you're a John Denver fan, but what he's describing is being out in Colorado back in the, you know, back 50 years ago, watching the Perseid meteor showers. That's what he's singing about in Rocky Mountain High.
I did not know that. Rocky Mountain High. I mean, what a way, again, to hit that level of awe, or, you know, it kind of takes us out of ourself in some kind of way. I mean, I think that's what a high is about, right? It kind of like lifts you. It takes you out somehow. And so, yeah, no, I didn't know that. That's pretty darn cool. And
that's exactly it. So they're supposed to peak, you know, they get better after midnight, between like midnight and maybe 4 a.m. when the sky starts to brighten a little bit. But, you know, that's not always the friendliest time for people. But you can also see a lot of them in the evening as the sky is darkening. And the ones in the evening, they get called earth grazers. They're coming in at a more shallow angle. And so there's fewer of them, but they tend to make longer streaks in the evening. So any time of night is good. And it's not just that night. You're going to see a lot of Perseids in the evenings before the 12th and 13th, and you're going to continue to see some afterwards. So if it's cloudy that night, go out and enjoy them.
I like the phrase earth grazers. I'd never heard that before. Yeah,
it is a good one, isn't it?
Yeah, I like that. And I guess I am aware that you have a program, I believe at Wildcat Mountain, during the Perseids for people to come out and see. Saturday the 12th, is that correct?
Saturday the 12th, Wildcat Mountain is having what they call a star party. There'll be a presentation at their amphitheater provided by a group from outside Chicago, Northwest Suburban Astronomers. And then when the program's over, everyone is invited to go back to the group campsite where they'll have telescopes set up. So you can look through the telescope, and then I hope just kind of settle in and enjoy the meteors across the sky.
Oh,
but you're right,
see.
Yeah, that's Saturday, August 12th. So you can do that, but also you can see the Perseids from anywhere.
Okay, so that's kind of nice to be able to distinguish a little bit, I guess, even what we can see just naked eye and what,
yep.
what, so, but if we would go out and join one of these stargazing parties or events or something else like that, what else would we expect to see?
Well, what else is coming up in August is Saturn is in opposition on August 27th. And what that means is Sun, Earth, and Saturn are all lined up, that Earth in its orbit around the Sun, we're passing between the Sun and Saturn. And what that means is Saturn rises in the east when the Sun's setting in the west and is visible all night long. So we can start seeing planets such as Saturn again. And then if you wait a little bit, Jupiter will also be really nice to see later this summer and into the fall. So every season has its different planets to enjoy.
And what is the best way for us to be able to identify them when we're looking in the night sky? You know, print off one of those maps from like Facebook page, or is there apps we should use, or how do we know what we're looking at?
Yeah, there are apps out there that you get on your phone that are just, you know, fine. Well, if you could hold it up, it uses GPS and can kind of identify everything for you. I like those apps. I use them, but I tend to also like turning my phone off when I'm outside and just enjoying the sky. And so I can be a little, you know, I tend to be old school too. I just like printing off a sky map. There's websites you can go to like Sky Maps and just print off a monthly map to tell you, you know, what the stars are and where the planets are going to be that month. So those are ways to find things in the sky.
Okay, and I guess it does make sense, too. You mentioned whatever we're watching for, but like with the Perseids, you mentioned that the moon will not be as bright. And I suppose that is something to think about. I mean, even as we're going out to look at things, that when when we're at new moon or the darker moon, we're going to be able to see more.
Right. And we humans, we're pretty good at seeing in the dark. I mean, we're not as good as other animals like my cat to see in the dark, but we're good. And we dark adapt, you know, when we're outside a few minutes, our pupils get really big and start letting in more light. And then we've got all these cool photochemical changes going on in our retinas that take 15, 20, 25 minutes, half hour, where we can just dark adapt and start seeing more. But then if we pull our phones out and look at them, poof, our night vision is gone, and then it takes, you know, another 15 minutes, a half hour to get it back. So that's why I'm real careful about the light I use at night, and even the moonlight can interfere with seeing things. So you will see many more Perseids if you just give your eyes a chance to adapt to the dark and get used to it.
Well, I like that. That makes sense, too, you know. So we want to dark adapt so that we can see best.
Right, so go to a place where you're less likely to have artificial light at night interfering, and you've got lots of places like that in Vernon County, and put your other lights away, put your flashlights away, put your cell phones away, and just let your eyes do what they're good at.
Well, and maybe this takes us into a little bit deeper territory again, but like, why do people want to look at Saturn? You know, why would people care that's Jupiter?
That is a good question of just, you know, I like the planet I'm living on, but I also like checking in on other planets. And how often do you get to do that of just, you know, without traveling too far, you get to visit all these other worlds and to see what they're like. And in a small telescope, you know, you can see some of the clouds of Jupiter. You can see four of the moons of Jupiter making their paths around. And one of my favorite views, of course, is just looking at the rings of Saturn. That never stops amazing me to get to see that live.
Mm-hmm. So far away, and I guess, you know, maybe we're not really always all that clear on understanding just exactly what influence, I don't know, they have. I think of, you know, so much in terms of energy and, you know, are they putting out some rays toward us that isn't somehow impacting humanity? It's just, again, interesting things to think about.
Yeah, I'm not too familiar with that. I just know my personal experience of looking there and thinking, wow, I am looking at photons that left the sun about 3 hours ago, traveled a billion miles all the way out to Saturn, got reflected by Saturn, and now are coming here to Earth. I'm thinking of just that voyage that those photons took, and what a privilege it is to be able to glimpse Saturn and its rings.
Interesting. And I guess I wondered, like, when you look at the night sky, I mean, in some ways, maybe that even answered this question a bit, but, you know, what do you see that the rest of us don't? But in some ways you might, I mean, you're talking about, you know, time past. What do you see that the rest of us don't?
Right. Good question of just that ability to look back in the time. You know, I mentioned, you know, Saturn, I'm seeing the way it was maybe an hour and a half ago. Looking at stars, you know, I'm seeing light that left before I was born. In a small telescope, I can look at different clouds of dust, different nebulas in the sky, such as the Orion Nebula, and thinking, oh, wow, I'm watching dust and gas coalesce and form stars. I'm watching baby stars. I'm watching stars being born. And it's a privilege to see that. Or looking up towards the constellation Lyra, the Lyre, in the summertime, of seeing the Ring Nebula and seeing, oh, I'm watching a star now at the end of its life, and there it is producing all these elements of carbon, nitrogen, oxygen, and sending them out into the neighborhood where they're going to coalesce and form new stars and maybe planets around those stars, and who knows, maybe life on some of those planets. Those are the things I just love seeing at night, of just that whole ecosystem of the life and death of stars. And
well, and I don't want to get too philosophical here or whatever, but does all this expand your picture of the bigger picture? I mean, what does this do for you?
I love getting to see that there is an entire universe out there, and count my blessings that I get to live in this great age of discovery where we're coming to know our own solar system and we're coming to know our home in the Milky Way. I'm grateful for that.
Yeah. One of the things I've been hearing a little bit in the social media world, again, is solar flares.
Yeah.
And I think maybe you can give us a little lesson on solar flares, but I'm understanding that they're even what impact our ability to see the northern lights.
Right, and it is on the increase. That solar activity is kind of on an 11-year cycle, where there's sort of like low activity, which we've had the past few years, and now we're entering a period where there's more activity on the sun, and so there's more discharges of charged particles from the sun, and that's what causes the northern lights. So we have every reason to expect a greater chance of seeing northern lights in the coming years as we move towards 2025. And for things that just all struck me, there were two of the best displays of northern lights already this spring, on March 23rd and April 23rd. And I hope a lot of your listeners got to see those as well, because those were just amazing to go outside and look up and seeing the northern lights dancing high overhead and shifting patterns and changing colors. Yeah.
Yeah, I will have
that
to say
in the spring.
It was fabulous. I mean, that was one of my experiences that I forgot about even already with my celestial awarenesses here. But that was, again, another one of those peak experiences. I had actually been gone for the winter and returned. I had just flown into Minneapolis on the 22nd and was spending the night with my sister. So we were in Rochester, and on March 23rd, another sister called and said, hey, there's northern lights you need to go see. And so, you know, we drove out north of Rochester and found a fairly dark spot. And what intrigued me is, I guess I anticipated that, you know, I'd see some light. I didn't anticipate the movement.
Right. And that was a rare display. Like I said, I think it's been 10 years since I've seen them that good. So it is a relatively rare experience to see a solar storm, a geomagnetic storm that is that powerful and that would last so long. And we're kind of lucky to be living here in Southwest Wisconsin where we can go to dark skies. But I saw pictures. These were even visible in Madison. People were watching them from UW looking out over Lake Mendota. So they were that bright that they were visible from Madison.
And would that have occurred, like, you know, you talk about this occurring in cycles, would that have occurred like an 11-year cycle ago, or, I mean, 11 years ago or something? Or is this extra special? What happened here?
That there was just increased solar activity. And so we're entering that period where there's more discharge from them than the sun triggering these northern lights.
Well, it's pretty fascinating, and I guess I'm glad that, you know, I mean, when the sun is like having these this activity going on, that, I mean, we get to experience it. I mean, that was really a beautiful opportunity, I guess, for me, I thought, and it was astounding to see all the pictures from across the area here and people that were able to see and experience that. And we stood out there that night, my sister, myself, and two of my sisters, for quite a long time because it just felt mesmerizing. It's almost like, you know, so many things that, you know, you don't want to take your eyes away.
No, and I'm glad both times I got to see it in good company. So yeah, if you get to see it with your crew, with your crowd, it does make a difference. It's just that common experience. So cannot predict what night they're going to return. All I can say is, you know, there's just an increased chance of seeing them. And also giving people a heads up, be careful about the hype of the Northern Lights. Because I know earlier in July we went through that where a lot of media sources were reporting a week ahead of time that we're going to see Northern Lights on July 13th. And you really can't predict them a week in advance. You can know a day or two in advance that they might be more likely to happen. But as far as space weather goes, you know, we're not at that point where we can accurately predict when the Northern Lights are going to show up. All we can do is talk about, you know, there's an increased chance tonight. Go out. Hope you see them.
Yeah. Oh, that's good to know, too, because I think I got a little caught in that hype even. You know, you watch, again, social media, you know,
right,
our source of information these days. And yeah, it's easy to get false information or inaccurate information. So
right. So find your reliable sources. For me, it is the National Oceanic Atmospheric Administration. They do space weather, National Weather Service. It's their job to keep track of solar activity, and so from Earth base, from satellites, they're watching the sun 24/7, and then we have satellites between us and the sun observing. And so when the charged particles are coming our way, you know, you might get a couple hours of notice.
Well, and this is one of the reasons I'm glad that you keep an eye on those, you know, official places, and I keep an eye on you.
Okay.
So I'm grateful for your knowledge in the area, and you're showing up in the social media sites and things that I do so I can keep informed. So, all right. Well, I guess it's time for another little break in our programming here. So I just want to take a moment, and I thank you, listeners, for tuning in. This is Kayleen Welsh. My guest today on this Conversations episode is John Heasley, a local astronomer and educator on the night sky. And we've been talking about all kinds of things about the night sky and what we can experience and what we can look forward to this summer. So thanks for tuning in. And you're listening on WDRT Community Radio, 91.9 FM. And if you happen to miss the program here or you want to listen to it again, you can always go find it in the archives at wdrt.org. So thank you for tuning in. And John, I guess let's continue a little bit. And again, I just so appreciate it of our conversation here. I'm learning some things and feeling excited about going out and engaging with the sky a little bit more. And one of the things that I know that you're very involved in and I'm excited to see in our area is the dark sky initiatives. So I guess let's just talk about that a little bit. What's happening and why and what's going on?
Yeah, I guess that's the sad thing, and the troubling thing is I keep talking about how inspiring it is that we get to see starry skies, but Kayleen, we're losing it every year. I thought we were losing it at the rate of 2% a a year, and now the latest research is showing, no, it's worse than we thought. We're losing the night sky at 10% a year, and it's all because of this experiment we're running with artificial light at night. We keep putting up more and more lights, and it's making it more difficult for people to see the night sky. So, yeah, that is very much an area of concern.
Well, and I can appreciate that. And again, I'm grateful for where I live. I was, again, just looking up some information around this, and there was a study in 2016 that said that 80% of the population of North America couldn't see the Milky Way. I thought, really?
What?
80%?
Yep.
I mean, does that even seem possible?
It is. And I mean, just living in Southwest Wisconsin, maybe we take that for granted that you can see the Milky Way from time to time, but most people in the United States from where they live can no longer see the Milky Way. I mean, the sad way I heard it was kids growing up today have significantly fewer stars to wish upon when they look up at the sky. And in my thinking, that should be the birthright of every child. You should be allowed to see what thousands of generations of humans have seen. So that's the pessimistic, you know, the sad part of it. The good news is it is so easy to remediate this problem of, I'm sure your listeners are aware of, you know, when groundwater is polluted, it's expensive, there's winners and losers, it takes a long time to clean up groundwater. Everything that's happening with climate change is going to be generations to try to correct that. The saying is, light pollution, we can solve that at the speed of light. You can just flip the lights off. So it's a solvable problem. So if we need an easy win in 2023, the scourge of artificial light at night, we can do that one. That one's easy.
That's good. Let's like break some of these things down to what we can get done and how, let's take action where we can, right?
Right.
Yeah, no, that's great. And I'm understanding that there's a couple of different areas here then in Vernon County or around that are looking to get this special designation. Is
that correct? It's something called an International Dark Sky Park. And there's maybe, about 200 of these all over the planet. And these are awarded by an organization called Dark Sky. And I'll quote from them, land possessing an exceptional or distinguished quality of starry nights and a nocturnal environment that's specifically protected for its scientific, natural, educational, cultural heritage, and public enjoyment. And so right now I'm helping out Kickapoo Valley Reserve, Wildcat Mountain State Park, and Tunnelville Cliffs, which is taken care of by Mississippi Valley Conservancy. We're in the process of seeking designation to become Wisconsin's next international dark sky park, the Kickapoo Valley Dark Sky Park.
That's exciting.
It is. It is. And so what we've been doing is measuring sky quality. You know, I go up there late at night with my light meter and measure sky quality and look to see what lights are on the horizon. We did a lot of work of taking a lighting inventory that was mostly headed up by Scott Lynn, and then looking at each light saying, do we need this light? Does it have a purpose? Is it brighter than it needs to be? Can it be put on a timer or motion detector? Can we shield the light so that the light's going down to the ground instead of up in the sky or in people's eyes? We've been looking for community partners, getting a lot of letters of support, and of course offering lots of public programs so people can come and enjoy the skies.
So where are we in the process then? It sounds like at this point there's been a lot of basically measuring light, changing light fixtures, seeing what we can do to minimize lights that turn on or direct their radiance a different direction.
Yeah.
How are we doing overall? Are we getting there?
We are getting there. I noticed that every time I go to Wildcat to stargaze, just how much better it's gotten. I notice every time I drive into or leave KVR at night just how much better the lighting is there. And of course, I love Tunnelville Cliffs because they're easy. They have no lights, and they never will have any lights. Have any lights there? So, and while we're working on this process, and it's a strenuous multi-year process, what I want people to know is they don't have to wait for the designation. The stars are there right now, and you can start enjoying them right now. And you can go to the KVR Kickapoo Valley Reserve website. Just look up Starry Skies, and we've put together all the resources you need. We've got maps for you of, you know, here's the places where you can go. If you want to hike at night, you know, we've kind of got some trails that are, you know, safe and easy to do at night, some tips on how to be a stargazer, and maps for all three properties so you can navigate at night. So don't delay.
Enjoy that
right now.
Yeah.
It's there. It's happening.
Okay. Yeah, I had no idea that those resources were out there like that. That sounds wonderful and really makes it easy for us to be able to get out and explore and kind of know what we're doing or where we're going or have some information to start with. And you're right. I mean, I think it makes so much sense. You know, I love the way you say the stars are there. You know, what are we waiting for? You know, it's not
right.
Like we have to have any special designation or reach a certain place. So are you finding support, you know, community? You talked about connecting with other community people, or how are people responding to this?
They are responding just great on that. I wasn't sure how that was going to go, but we've gotten, you know, we've solicited them and asked for those, and just so many letters of support that people are seeing the benefits of. You know, it's a healthier community, it's good for the ecosystem. There's something called astrotourism, where people will come to an area just to enjoy sky watching and stargazing, so people see that. And I think there's a lot of pride that this area in eastern Vernon County along Kickapoo River is becoming an international dark sky part, that we're part of this larger movement. So it kind of puts Vernon County on the map, and I think rightly so. It's a good source of pride.
I like that. I mean, I'm personally appreciating astrotherapy, astrotourism. I mean, some of the terms that we're coming up with. And I guess it has me also thinking a bit about the fact that we are in this beautiful driftless area, which is, you know, unglaciated. And in my mind, then there's a sense of purity. And it seems like not only do we get that with the earth then and the land that we're living on, we also have availability of that in some ways with our light and our dark skies, that we really can see the sky and access it as clearly and, I don't know, as we possibly can. That's lovely, really.
It is, and I'm glad it's being shared. You know, we mentioned about Wildcat Mountain having their star party on August 12th, and the people putting that together, those are Northwest Suburban Astronomers. That's the suburbs of Chicago, and this is a group of stargazers, and for decades they've been coming up to Wildcat. They take over the group campground for over a week just so they can stargaze together.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of fun to be around them, and I'm grateful that they do these public programs while they are there. But for the people in the suburbs of Chicago, yeah, Wildcat Mountain has long been their destination to see starry skies.
That's fascinating. And, you know, some of those treasures that we have right here, then do we appreciate them, I think, is one of the questions that comes up.
Yeah.
And, as we're talking about turning off some of the lights and, you know, supporting these designations for these dark sky initiatives, what can people do? Can people do anything to help?
Yeah, simple steps. One is to start thinking about our relationship to the night and the dark. Fear of the dark is real. It is out there. People want to be safe at night. People want to be safe at night. But we've kind of fallen into this mindset of more light is going to make us safer at night. And I often use the phrase smart lighting. I'm not on a campaign to turn off all the artificial light at night. That time is gone. You know, we're not going back to the 19th century. I'm just asking people to consider the light that we are using, to ask, does this light have a purpose? If it does, can the light be pointed down? When I'm in a city or a crossroads, you know, it's kind of nice that there's a light there. If I'm walking on a sidewalk, I like for the sidewalk to be lit so I can find my way out at night. But I like for the sidewalk to be lit, not the light shining in my face, because we all know how annoying that is when those high beams come at us on the highway. And there's no reason for the light to be shining up in the sky. It's just lighting up, you know, the bellies of birds and planes and going off into space. We don't need to be visible from low Earth orbit if all we want to do is just light up the sidewalk, light up the street.
Well, it sounds like in some ways there's kind of a flowchart method we could follow there. You know, do we need this light? If so, yes. And if so, can I, like, turn it a different direction or dim it or have it only come on periodically? And, okay, if so, yes.
Right. It's just going there. And once you have that mindset of, now when I'm driving around at night, it's something I notice as I'm passing through, coming home at night, through the different small towns, of how well they light up their streets at night. What type of lighting are they using? Is it smart lighting? Is it doing the job? And for aesthetics, I also notice, you know, the look it gives the light, the look that the light gives to the town. That now that we're shifting to LED lighting, it tends to be more blue-white lighting. And Kaylee, I always associate that with clinics or with industrial spaces. What I like to see is softer lighting that's more amber or golden in color. Mm-hmm. And I think that just gives a town a real nice look at light. Not light that's chasing you away, but light that's saying, come here, linger, pause here. It's a comforting space. So that's my experience with artificial light. The light that we need, let's choose it carefully and make our towns look good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's good. I guess I just want to go back for a minute, because Tunnelville Cliffs, I guess that's just not an area that I'm real familiar with, but there are maps for that and information on the Kickapoo Valley Reserve website. Is that correct?
Right. Kickapoo Valley will, when you go there, that's kind of our landing area. It'll show you maps of Kickapoo Valley Reserve and where to stargaze, maps for Wildcat, and maps for Tunnelville Cliffs. And Mississippi Valley Conservancy, who takes care of Tunnelville Cliffs as one of their preserves, they were back. Great. They updated their map. They designated, hey, check out this trail along this ridgetop here. This is a nice place to walk at night because it's mowed and, you know, you're not going to get lost, and it's pretty good footing. And here's an area where you can park off the highway and see the stars. So Mississippi Valley Conservancy has done a great job of just kind of pointing out, here's where you can stargaze. KVR did that, and Wildcat did the same thing of just, they updated their maps to show, here are stargazing areas, and they added a new trail at Wildcat called the Starlight Trail. Like, here's a trail that you specially designated for hiking at night.
That's very interesting, and it's very helpful, because I always think about that, going out at night, and where am I going to park, and just different things, and so to have that information is important. And I guess, you know, my brain is kind of going, there's probably a bunch of different ways that this extra light impacts us. I'm thinking about even whether wildlife or, I'm thinking, you know, as a therapist and people, I'm hearing so much about people having difficulty sleeping. I think our light pollution is affecting our sleep patterns. It's just interesting to even think about health and some of the pieces is if we switch to softer lights, warmer lights, less lights, and even in some ways synced up with the natural rhythm of light and dark. Just feels like those are all good things that could be supportive to human life.
That is so right and so very well put of, you can hear my enthusiasm is I want to be able to see the stars at night. But even if you're not a sky watcher, we're running this experiment of disrupting our circadian rhythms by turning night into day. And I don't have a medical background. I read some of the research showing about the health risk of artificial light at night, and that information starts coming in. The profound effect that it's having on our ecosystem, how it's affecting insects and migrating birds, of they're just not adapted to navigating a world with artificial light. We think it's making us safer, but the glare from light is actually making nighttime more dangerous. What else? We're wasting energy, we're wasting money that we don't need to. So yeah, there's a lot of consequences to artificial light at night, and we can make choices to improve all those things to make life better for ourselves.
Yeah, I like that. I like the idea of even appreciating the dark a little bit more. And John, I recognize that we're kind of coming up to the close of our time here. So do you want to share some contact information? I almost wish we could have talked a little bit more about like your party offerings. I mean, the opportunity that people can connect with you, and you'll set up for like garden parties or things like that. Is that correct?
That's true. Yeah, I do offer what's called star parties, where I set up a telescope. I've done those at libraries, parks, weddings, birthdays, all kinds of gatherings. So, but the best place people can reach me is on Facebook with Driftless Stargazing, and that's really been my best way to let people know about what's going up in the nighttime sky. So just look for Driftless Stargazing on Facebook, and I'll try to let you know anytime something awesome's happening overhead.
Awesome. Thank you. Appreciate you being out there doing that for us. And any other final thoughts or comments that you'd like to make?
One thing I would just mention to people for planning, we've got a solar eclipse coming up on April 8th of next year, so six months away. We talk about things that inspire us with awe. Seeing a total solar eclipse, that was one of the most awesome experiences of my life. So you got to travel for that one a little bit, but if you can make plans to travel to the Path of Totality on April 8th next year, you'll be happy you did.
Okay, great. That's awesome. Thank you for the heads up on that. And I guess I would like to close with just a little poem that I found as I was preparing or thinking about this program. And it's a poem called Look Up by Louis Untermeyer. Look up, fear nothing. In the darkest night, a million, million stars crown you with light. Look up, there is a universe to share. The earth, the heaven of stars, all that endures are yours. I think it's fascinating. I appreciate you taking the time to speak with us today, John, and I'm really grateful. I hope that people enjoy their opportunities and appreciate all the efforts that's being done to preserve the night sky in our area. Thank you for your efforts.
Kayleen, beautiful, beautiful poem. I'm glad to know about that. And thanks for the opportunity to share stars with people on WDRT this morning.
Great. Thanks so much.